It's 6 past 12 and 79 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News. Coming up this hour, Santa Fe has joined just a handful of other cities around the U.S. in banning plastic grocery bags. We'll listen in as councilors debate last night's action and as members of the public weigh in on the issue. Whooping cough is back with a vengeance. The state health department says it's at epidemic levels. What now for the Mexican gray wolf after the Center for Biological Diversity gets a brief reprieve for the wild animal? I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagen, and more after we check headlines. An advocacy group is criticizing the University of New Mexico for taking part in a government study of infants. The group says the study exposes premature infants to risks without the parents' knowledge. The Albuquerque Journal reports that another 17 universities are taking part in the same study. The group, Public Citizen, says it wants the federal government to stop funding the study, which aims to find better ways to treat anemia in premature infants. The news report says about 900 infants would get a low level of hemoglobin transfusions. Public Citizen says that consent forms signed by parents don't fully explain the risks. There will be no plastic grocery bags in Santa Fe 6 months from now. City Council last night approved an ordinance outlawing the bags while still allowing heavier plastic shopping bags to be used in other retail stores. Paper grocery bags will be available, but each one will cost 10 cents. Councilor Ron Trujillo cast the only no vote against the ordinance. He said the plastic bag ban should apply uniformly throughout the city, regardless of the type of bag being used. More on this story coming up. A developer's plans for the old Manderfield School in the historic district are changing once more. Agents for Claire Maris say she plans to drop the idea of including a coffee house in development of the property. That step may remove the biggest stumbling block facing development. The New Mexican reports that neighborhood groups had protested any major commercial development at the site. Claire Maris and her father planned to buy the vacant building from the school district for nearly $1 million. Two New Mexico news organizations are suing the state to get their hands on a controversial audit of health providers. The Las Cruces Sun News and the investigative group New Mexico In Depth say the public has a right to know. The state's Human Services Department had refused to release details in the audit, and the Attorney General says the details are being requested are not releasable under provisions of state law. 15 mental health providers are being investigated after findings from the audit suggested they may have committed fraud. The number of New Mexico counties offering same-sex marriages is now up to 6. Valencia, San Miguel, and Taos counties have joined Santa Fe, Bernalillo, and Doña Ana in allowing gay couples to wed. About half of New Mexico's total population lives in those 6 counties. There's word from Washington that the FAA is beginning to process Virgin Galactic's application to fly passengers into suborbital space. The aircraft that will make the trip are still in the testing phase in Mojave, California, but Virgin expects that phase to be completed before long. The Las Cruces Sun News says flights could begin sometime next year. The State Public Safety Department is gearing up for an auction of surplus items on September 7th. They say they have 1,000 surplus items, including cars, trucks, boats, trailers, office furniture, and confiscated items. New Mexicans can get a sneak preview on September 5th and again on the 6th. The auction itself takes place at State Police Headquarters in Santa Fe on the 7th. And in weather for Santa Fe, 81 degrees right now. Look for sunny skies and upper 80s for highs today through the balance of the week. Every afternoon, a slight chance for a shower. More coming up.
Support for KSFR comes from Upaya Zen Center, a Zen Buddhist practice training and service center for engaged Buddhism. Upaya is open to the community for daily meditation sits, Wednesday night Dharma talks, and outstanding trainings and retreats. September 20th to 22nd, Edo Francis Carney and Shinzon Palma present Wisdom Teachings of Ryokan, the Spiritual Dynamics of Simplicity. To learn more, call 986-8518 or visit upaya.org. That's upaya.org.
On Wall Street, stocks are mixed. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 68 points at 14,845. 12:11 on At Noon from KSFR News. More now on that action by Santa Fe City Council. It was a session with enthusiastic supporters of a ban on grocery bags and a nearly unanimous vote in favor of it by the full City Council. In 6 months, those grocery bags will be no more, even though other plastic-type bags in grocery stores will remain. Among them, those bags you put vegetables, rice, and other bulk items in. Paper bags will still be available at the checkout at a cost of 10 cents a bag. The turnout at City Hall was colorful, some supporters of the ban wearing bags and waving signs. When it came time for public testimony, young people got the chance to go first.
When we get old and our hair turns gray, we want plastic bags to be far away. We could look at the world from a different perspective, where birds and bees could fly with the wind, not plastic nets that capture them. It may seem hard, but I know we can do it, because if we all work together, we can make a change. So, when I get old and our hair turns gray, we want plastic bags to be far away.
Okay, it's hard not to clap for that one, right? Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next. Hello, welcome.
Hi, my name is Eubin Stillings. And I just want to say that it's really important for bags to go away because I heard a story where there were three people at a dump who were in charge of taking plastic bags out of the fence. And I don't want people to be paid for taking plastic bags out of the fence. I think it's just plastic bags shouldn't even be in the fence.
So. Okay. Thank you. All right, next. Thanks, Lisa, for helping.
Hi, I'm Josette Goudelet. I just wanted to say that we need to help the earth so that the earth doesn't become more polluted.
Thank you for coming. Next, please. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Sarah Pierpont, and I work with the New Mexico Recycling Coalition. We're a statewide nonprofit that works as an advocate for recycling, and we support the ban of the single-use plastic bag. We also encourage the City of Santa Fe to develop further ordinances to increase diversion and recycling in Santa Fe.
Next, please. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Susan Odysseus. I'm here tonight to basically convey a different point of view. Eliminating plastic bags flies in the face of there being one of the most reused items we all bring into our homes for pet waste, wet garbage, and a myriad of other uses.
As we've been reporting, Councillor Ron Trujillo cast the only no vote.
So I have this problem with you know, just going after these certain businesses, but yet downtown businesses who have plastic bags, I see people walk out of the stores with their $500 shoes in a big, nice plastic bag. To me, that's a single. Wouldn't that be considered a single-use bag? In my opinion, it would be.
Mayor Pro Tem, Councillor Trujillo, if the bag is of a certain thickness, what is
it? See, there we go now. It's of a certain thickness. It's plastic.
And because it's of a certain thickness and it has handles, it is considered reusable. And so, unlike some of the thinner plastic bags, a thinner plastic bag only has so many uses to it.
You know what? The little white plastic bags I get for Walmart, I can find a whole bunch of uses because they're reusable in my house. I put them in my trash bins, my trash cans. I go outside. I pit weeds in them when I'm cleaning up my yard. So don't say that, you know, single use. They're more use. I can get a lot of uses out of them.
I understand, Counselor.
These are just questions, and I just want everybody here to be clear. These are questions that I've been told by constituents. It's not about the environment. It's about seeing what's right for this community. And the problem, other problem I have is the 10-cent charge. Who thought of the 10-cent charge? You know, was that a magical number, or is that something that we're going to be charging? Because as of right now, do I get charged when I go to any grocery store the 10 cents?
My understanding is currently there are no stores that are charging. There are stores that are
no, but we're going to force them to start charging.
That's correct, Counselor. The idea is that since the average price for a brown bag is 7 cents,
so why are we charging 10 cents?
Counselor Rivera, you have a observation?
The one thing I want to say is that he's right. We probably should be banning all bags. However, this is a great start, and I think eventually we might get to that point.
Councilor Rebecca, word story.
This was a community effort, and then we had all the young people that have been mentioned from the schools. So this would not have happened. I know it has been, it is also timing in passing legislation, but I just want to reinforce that this is hard work, that this wasn't a matter of a piece of a resolution that we just jumped on because we had read it in the paper, and I want to commend everybody that has worked so hard to bring us to this point tonight.
Discussion at Santa Fe City Council over the banning of plastic bags. In 6 months, they will be no more. 1217 on at noon. Pertussis, whooping cough, has been occurring in near epidemic levels across the country, and New Mexico has been no exception. On the line to discuss the current state of this potentially dangerous disease is David Selvidge, an epidemiologist with the New Mexico Department of Health. David Selvidge, we know there is an increase in the number of active pertussis cases in the state, but this is August. Is this an unusual time for this?
This is not an unusual time. We have historically, particularly in the last several years, seen increases in reported cases during the beginning of school. And I think that that seems to make sense because suddenly you have kids going back and clustering together in classrooms and schools. There's just a lot more contact. Plus, we have our school nurses and other school personnel who are identifying children who are coughing, and so then those children are getting evaluated. I think that partially explains what we see around this time of the year is just the phenomenon of kids going back to school. But we also have been in a period going back to 2011 in New Mexico of very high pertussis incidence. And this mirrors what's happening nationally. In 2012, nationally, there were more pertussis cases reported than in any year going back to the 1950s. And in New Mexico last year, we had 898 confirmed and probable cases of pertussis in New Mexico, which is definitely more than we've seen going back many decades. This year, we are continuing to see very high incidence of pertussis in New Mexico. So it appears that it may be abating a little bit. The numbers aren't quite as high compared to the same time period, but they're still very, very high for our state.
Why, if it decreased decades ago, why is it coming back?
It's multifactorial. There are different reasons, different things that are playing a role in what we're seeing. One thing that we're seeing is better detection of cases because we have new technologies for testing that have improved our ability to actually detect cases when they occur. That's one thing. We also have, because we've been doing a lot of promotion and trying to raise awareness of this issue, I think greater awareness of the disease, and so doctors, nurse practitioners, PAs, and nurses are thinking about it when they see children who are coughing. The other thing that we're seeing is that with the switch to a new vaccine in 1996, the acellular form of the pertussis vaccine, waning immunity of after about 5 years after receiving the last vaccination. And so that's contributing as well. And there is some preliminary information to suggest that the bacteria itself is beginning to change. There was a study that was done in Pennsylvania last year that identified changes genetically in the organism. Again, this is very preliminary, and there needs to be more work done on this, but it's the first time that we've seen this particular phenomenon in the United States amongst the pertussis isolates. So this may also be contributing to what we're seeing. But, again, we need more data, more isolates to really say anything definitive.
How serious can pertussis be?
Well, pertussis can be very serious particularly in our infant population and those infants that are between birth and 4 months of age, we have very high rates of hospitalization complications and then occasionally even death. So amongst that population, the pertussis can be particularly problematic. And one of our efforts at Department of Health that we're starting is really trying to figure out how we can decrease morbidity and mortality amongst infants less than a year of age, because they're the group in our communities that suffer a disproportionate burden of disease. They have the highest rates by far, and they also then suffer the greatest risk or are at highest risk and may have suffer severe complications. So we're trying to focus our efforts in protecting that group in particular.
Can it be treated? Does it respond to antibiotics?
Yes, pertussis does respond to antimicrobials, and when we identify a case or our case is reported, we first make certain that the person, if they're still within the infectious period, has been treated with antimicrobials, and then we also make certain that those close contacts around them, household contacts or other close contacts who are at high risk of complications, have received antibiotics as a form of prevention. So yes, it does respond to antimicrobials. One thing, though, about this disease is that if you have pertussis and you get treated with antimicrobials and you're into your disease a couple of weeks, you will no longer be infectious after you've taken the antibiotics, but you may end up coughing for a protracted period of time. And that's a result of the toxins that this bacteria releases into the airway that can cause damage and may cause a person to cough for up to, you know, several months. In China, they refer to pertussis as the 100-day cough. So antibiotics definitely play a role, and we definitely are involved in making certain people are treated or prophylaxed if they're contacts. But that doesn't mean that antibiotics necessarily are going to improve the cough. There is some evidence to suggest that if you get the antibiotics early in the course of the disease, that it can actually improve the course of disease and shorten the course of disease. But that's sometimes a problem because people don't think of pertussis till people have been coughing for 2 weeks or more usually.
You mentioned the bacterium is changing. Does that suggest it could lead to resistance to treatment?
There is no evidence to date, and we just talked to CDC last week, that we're seeing any antibiotic resistance at this point. CDC continues to look at isolates that they receive of the bacteria and do testing to see whether or not the antibiotics that are normally prescribed are still working against this bacteria, and so far we have not seen any resistance.
Scary stuff. Anything else to know?
Yes, there is something I'd like the listeners to know about. There is a new recommendation that all pregnant women receive a Tdap booster during each pregnancy, ideally during the third trimester. This has been recommended by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and CDC. This recommendation is relatively new. It was first published last October and then came out officially in the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report in February of 2013. So again, this is a new recommendation and one that has not seen great uptake yet. Again, it's still early, but that is for pregnant women to receive a Tdap booster. And Tdap is the adolescent adult vaccine that protects against pertussis during each pregnancy, ideally between 27 and 36 weeks of gestation or the third trimester.
And it's worth noting, you can find more information on the Department of Health's website. David Selvidge at the Department of Health, many thanks. 12:24 on at noon. One of the airlines serving Santa Fe is pitching in to help the less fortunate. KSFR's Charles Maynard has this.
Great Lakes Airlines is one of the commercial air carriers that services Santa Fe. They're marking Hunger Action Month with a drive to help the food depot in Santa Fe. Caitlin Anderson is with the airlines.
Here at Great Lakes, we do provide regional air service. We take you from local communities, and we connect you with hubs that will connect you to virtually anywhere in the world. In addition to that, corporate social responsibility is really important to us. And because we're a regional airline and we're smaller, we get to really dig deep in those communities that we serve. And this is a way of us doing that and caring more about the communities and just having a chance to help. So this September, in honor of Hunger Action Month, at our Santa Fe Municipal Airport, you can donate any non-perishable food items, and all of those food items will benefit the food depot. in an effort to kind of snuff out hunger in the area. But it doesn't stop there. As an incentive, every time you donate at least one non-perishable food item, you'll be eligible to enter in our weekly drawing for one of four free round-trip tickets to either Denver or Phoenix. Starting September 1st, you can bring them by anytime between 8:30 a.m. and 3 o'clock p.m. at the Santa Fe Municipal Airport, like I said before. And it'll run throughout the entire month of September, so make sure you bring as much as you can. One entry per person per week, though, so we'll do weekly drawings, and every time you donate at least one during the week, you'll have a chance to enter into our drawing for those free round-trip tickets.
This is not the first year that Great Lakes has helped out with the food drive in Santa Fe. In fact, it's the fifth. Past drives have been successful.
It's gone really well. We've had a really good turnout in previous years at most of our locations. But for Santa Fe, we're really looking forward to a great turnout. We've had a really great partnership with the Food Depot this year, and we're looking forward to having a lot of food donations more than ever before, and we're hoping that you all can help us with that.
Currently, the airline offers nonstop round-trip service to Denver and Phoenix.
They're conveniently timed throughout the day, and they're the easiest way to get to Phoenix or Denver from Santa Fe. Flying locally, you just cannot beat it. Driving this to Phoenix is about 7 hours. To Denver, it's around 5 hours. And when you're home, you're home. When you're done traveling, you want to fly right into your community. So the driving's done, you're just there. That's one of the benefits that Great Lakes offers its customers.
Plans for expansion are possible.
You know, we're always looking for suggestions. Right now, I don't see that happening in the moment. However, we're always looking to hear from our communities and take feedback from you all. So continue voicing what you'd like to see, and we'll try to make it happen here at headquarters. Our customers mean the world to us, and so we're always looking to try to provide the best air service possible to you all.
Caitlin Anderson with Great Lakes Airlines.
Starting September 1st, make sure you bring all your non-perishable food items to the Santa Fe Municipal Counter at our Great Lakes counter there. And for more information, check out flygreatlakes.com. Also check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Fly Great Lakes.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Santa Fe has just experienced the two driest years on record, and the drought is not going away. In times like these, we have to save every drop. One way is to water during the cool part of the day. If you water when it's hot, the water evaporates, plants can burn, and you could be fined. Under city rules, you cannot water between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. from May 1st to October 31st. So, water when it's cool outside. It's better for your garden. It's better for our water future. And it's the law. A message from the City of Santa Fe.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Santa Fe Reporter, providing local news and arts and entertainment information to more than 60,000 readers each week. The Reporter is available every Wednesday at over 300 locations in Santa Fe and the surrounding area, and on the web at sfreporter.com.
1229 and 81 degrees in Santa Fe, as At Noon continues from KSFR News. For a number of years, the population of the Mexican gray wolf has been declining. But organizations like the Center for Biological Diversity have led the fight to save the animal. Now, there's some good news for the wolf. And to tell us about it, Michael Robinson with the Center for Biological Diversity. What is this news?
To be clear, we have two settlement agreements regarding two separate issues that both affect the survival and recovery of the Mexican wolf. So one of the settlement agreements stems from a lawsuit that we filed last year requesting that or insisting that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service reform its mismanaged program on reintroducing Mexican wolves into the Gila National Forest in southern New Mexico and the Apache National Forest of adjoining in Arizona. This stems from scientific recommendations that were made actually 12 years ago and that have been ignored by the Fish and Wildlife Service. So we filed suit. The Fish and Wildlife Service has began a process of reforming the 1998 rule that governs the reintroduction. But they've begun this process in the past only to stop it. And in this case, our settlement agreement requires them to finish the process with a final rule by January 12th, 2015. So just a little over 14 months from now. So the procrastination will end and the rule will be reformed, and we are submitting comments, and we certainly encourage everybody else to submit comments as well, including through the Center for Biological Diversity's website, and other means that support scientific changes in the program. So one of the changes that's proposed that we have been pushing for is to allow release of wolves from the captive breeding pool into New Mexico. Currently, under the rule, they are only allowed to be released into Arizona, which is a very rare occasion, and then wolves can spread out on their own accord, on their own four paws, into New Mexico, or they can be captured from the wild and then released after having been captured from the wild in New Mexico, which is fraught with risks to the wolves. So this will allow them to be released directly into New Mexico and will allow, hopefully, a rapid increase in the population because there's millions of acres in the Gila National Forest that have no territorial wolves.
And you say there are some other changes, too?
Now, there's some other negative changes proposed, including blocking the wolves from moving past Interstate 40, north of Interstate 40, or south of Interstate 10. And that would be a very damaging change, or rather, it would be a very damaging new boundaries to set up, and we are that are available for wolf releases there. So that's one facet of what we expect to see changed and what has already been proposed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Another would allow wolves to establish territories, essentially to roam at will outside of the arbitrary boundaries of the recovery area as it stands now, which is, as I said, the Gila and Apache National Forests. Under current rules, even if a wolf is not bothering anyone, the government is required to capture that animal from the wild if it establishes a territory wholly outside of the recovery area boundaries or outside of boundaries of adjoining private or tribal lands where the wolves are welcomed. Negative changes proposed, including blocking the wolves from moving past Interstate 40, north of Interstate 40, or south of Interstate 10. And that would be a very damaging change, or rather, it would be a very damaging new boundaries to set up, and we are we're opposing that.
Now, isn't Mexico releasing wolves from that country?
And the story with that is that Fish and Wildlife Service, right after Mexico had begun a reintroduction program in the spur of the Sierra Madre Mountains in fall of 2011, 1 month later, they issued themselves, Fish and Wildlife Service issued it themselves, a permit to capture any of those wolves if they were perceived to be in conflict with the livestock industry. They issued the permit with no public notice, which is contrary to the law. It really would undermine recovery for a rare animal that needs, most of all, just not to be messed with. And that's something that we challenged in court, and we're happy to see with this year, and we're happy to see that now to have signed the settlement agreement with the Fish and Wildlife Service, whereby they admit that they do not have the authority to capture wolves released from Mexico because those animals should be fully protected under the law and indeed deserve to be fully protected.
If a wolf is endangering livestock, is it fair game for hunting?
If a wolf from the U.S. reintroduction program released or progeny of the animals released into Arizona or New Mexico is attacking livestock on private land, then the rancher or the rancher's designee has the legal right to shoot that wolf in the act of attacking, and that has to mean not just in the vicinity of the animal, not feeding on a carcass, which perhaps the wolf would not have killed but was merely scavenging on, but in the act of attacking means that there has to be evidence of biting, wounding, etc. So that there is that legal right under the law.
You've gotten some things done, but it sounds like it's not over yet.
We are currently going through a public comment period, and again, I encourage everybody to check out what we have on the Center for Biological Diversity's website, biologicaldiversity.org, and there's also good information on www.mexicanwolves.org. Participate in the public comment period. There may be a public hearing taking place, possibly in Albuquerque in October. And speak up for your Mexican wolves, because there's only 75 of them left in the United States, and most frighteningly, only 3 breeding pairs. So they need these reforms, and they need the reforms to be science-based.
We'll keep an eye on it. Michael Robinson, Center for Biological Diversity, many thanks. And here's Christopher Hagen, who some say he's biologically diverse himself.
I recently came across a product line that hitherto had not entered my limited perceptive universe as a participant. Jamaican Country Style Brand, a.k.a. JCSKitchen.com. The tagline, the finest Caribbean food since 1982. Great sauces, seasonings, spices, and more. Well, I've at least tried the hot sauces. Excellent. I was introduced to JCSKitchens.com by a popular local restaurant. The restaurant's been in town for a while. I was aware of it, drove by it, never ate there until a few months ago. Boy, have I missed a lot of good eating. Finally stopped by Jambo Cafe. Shut my mouth. Well, I won't, because then I wouldn't be able to talk. I know, that might be a good thing. A mixture of African and Caribbean food and a touch of the Indian subcontinent. If you haven't been to Jambo Cafe, I would suggest doing so. You can check them out at jambocafe.net. Jambo be jammin'. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.